Fusion Patrol is brought to you in part by our patrons at patreon.com/fusionpatrol.
We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Simon.
Tonight we're continuing our journey through the animated reconstructions of Doctor Who episodes with the second Doctor adventure, The Moonbase. The Doctor, Polly, Ben, and Jamie arrive, accidentally, on the moon. Through a little bit of horseplay, Jamie is hurt and taken aboard a moon base, which controls the Earth's weather through a powerful device known as the Graviton. They have arrived, coincidentally, at the same time a mysterious disease is knocking off the members of the base. The disease is controlled by the Cybermen, and the Doctor must once again fight his not-so-old foes. Okay, so another reconstructed episode, another Patrick Troughton added back into the collection that we can all watch and enjoy. Yep. And I'm going to say I'm really happy that this one's back. You know, in comparison to things like, I hate to pick on it, but Reign of Terror or
10th Planet.
Or 10th Planet. This one, I really am glad that they managed to get back, because this one does seem to be a fairly typical Doctor Who episode, whereas 10th Planet had a lot of missing Hartnell and didn't really kind of get going.
The interesting thing about 10th Planet is that it's a completely atypical Doctor Who episode, in the sense that up to that point it had never happened that the lead actor had changed before. I mean, in a way, there's loads of typical Doctor Who episodes in the archive, even though loads of them have been junk.
I'd have been happier with the first three episodes of it being a little more typical. And then, you know, then they can go off in the launch. But it's,
The moon base.
No, 10th Planet. But
But anyway. But if you want to watch what I'm kind of saying is, if you want to watch a typical Doctor Who episode, there are loads of those still extant. If there's something particularly interesting about an episode that's gone missing, then it's somehow all the more devastating that we aren't able to watch it. On the other hand, I don't want to rain on the parade of the moon base, because I think it is a really solid, it's highly enjoyable, and you know that I'm a big Patrick Troughton fan, so of course I'm absolutely delighted that we've got another of his great stories back. But also, all the kind of things that I was picking on over 10th Planet, or at least a great many of them, are done so well in this episode. It's just... In this story. It's such a... Because the Cybermen are back later on in the same season.
Yeah.
You know, this is, but hardly any time has passed.
We'll go here early. I'd save this for later, but I'll just get to this point now. This is Patrick Troughton's third episode. We have Power of the Daleks. No, fourth. Power of the Daleks, which we've reviewed previously, and I'll come back to that. And then there was the Highlanders, where he picked up Jamie. And then there's the Underwater Menace, which, you know, knock on wood, we'll see soon.
In some form.
And which they still haven't announced what form it's going to be.
By the time people are listening to this, they'll already have watched it.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. I'm still not convinced about that release date. Let's hope. I'm going to maintain a positive attitude, even though it's the Underwater Menace, and which I'll still be happy to see. In Power of the Daleks, which we reviewed based on a reconstruction,
Reconstructed.
Yeah, it was barely even that. Right, it's audio and the Daleks recognize the Doctor. There's a real implied recognition that the Daleks still know who the Doctor is, despite the fact that he's just regenerated. Now here, the Cybermen, who he only met four episodes ago, and I might add, he wiped out of existence, walk into the room, look at the Doctor. You are known to us.
Okay, so is Power of the Daleks set after Evil of the Daleks? Is the moon base?
It's a good
set
question.
After
it's a good question. I don't know that the one of the many writers others had thought that Moffat-y far ahead.
I think it's very unlikely. I'm playing devil's advocate, really. They didn't do timey-wimey.
So my question is this. Do you think they were trying, and then they just kind of never went anywhere, to establish some sort of mythos that says the Doctor is still recognizable in some form that perhaps we can't perceive? That maybe that's what they were going for, because those two lines within four episodes seem so intentionally designed to ignore the regeneration, is what it feels like to me.
I think they're unintentionally. I mean, my guess is it's a kind of slightly more extreme version of the fact that Polly instantly recognizes Cybermen, even though
they
don't
look
much like the Cybermen that she's seen before, and it's because there is
the
omniscient viewer. Well, not quite omniscient, but what we know, what we see, is that yes, they are the same Cybermen, and we also know that this is the same Doctor. So I think it's basically just that
the writers had written this for Hartnell, and then nobody on the set went,
No. I just don't think they thought it was important. I don't think that it was that.
Well, why waste
someone
the line,
goofed
then?
by not picking up that piece of continuity? I think they wouldn't have thought it was important, because the viewers know it's the same Doctor. The viewers know that he's met the Cybermen before, and so it to all intents and purposes, it's a rematch. And playing around with who's actually seen whom in what form before is kind of it's almost pedantry when what you've got is ephemeral theatre.
I cannot
effect.
Help that think though that line is not there. Nothing comes of it. Let's put it that way. There's never any kind of you're known to us. Let's lock him up. He's dangerous. They just ignore him. And after having made that, of course, it's only in the animated form, so we don't really see what the Cyberman does. In the animated version, he, of course, just stares at the Doctor, and the Doctor stares at him for a little bit, and then the Cyberman goes on. For all I know, maybe the Cyberman lifted his arm to do a chop and kill the Doctor on the spot, and then thought better of it and put his arm down. We don't know what happened in that space, but it seems like you said that, and then you ignored the obvious danger. And considering that your then mantra later in the episode is all threats will be eliminated to wipe out all life on Earth, just because I'm not sure why. But anyway, it seemed like that the story people were trying to say something and then really didn't communicate it very well.
I think that might be us. I think that might be us with a more with our retrospective view of the show, and the fact that it has been picked over, and the fact that the Doctor, you know, we're much more au fait with the idea of the Doctor having lots of different faces and dealing with that in story. So
what?
I think it takes on a different significance to us looking at it now.
Well, that's why is this something different that they were going on than what we see in retrospect? Were they...
Were they trying to
do something that, you know, never materialized it, and
I think they weren't trying. I think they weren't trying to do anything at all. I think they were trying to acknowledge the fact that this was a returning monster, and so the doctor knew them. They knew the Doctor. The fact that it's not the same Doctor who met them before and all that, that's kind of pernickety detail from the point of view of the thinking about the show as it was then. This whole thing of the Doctor's appearance and personality changing, that was the business of a couple of episodes. I mean, as you rightly point out, this was an issue again in Power of the Daleks. Only one story after he'd regenerated, and yet it didn't seem to be important then. So a few stories down the line, you know, regeneration isn't a big thing. It's just how we got from one actor playing the part to another.
I am seriously planning to change the opening tag for Fusion Patrol from "Welcome to the Discussion" to "Viewing each episode in pernickety detail." Yeah. It is what we do.
It's fair enough to pick it up and ask the question, but I think that they wouldn't have seen it as being terribly important. And also, when it comes down to how much did I enjoy this story, it's like, how much did this mistake, since I think that's what it was, detract from my enjoyment of this story? Well, pretty much zero.
It didn't detract from my enjoyment. I was just wondering if there was a canvas that we either haven't seen or never will because of the episodes are missing, and then they, you know, just abandon the idea or got a new producer who didn't. You know how that goes. One producer has sort of this thought about the way it should be, and then the next producer has another thought about the way it should be, and things just get lost. But
yeah, well, we'll have to wait until that shipping container gets back from Nigeria. Oh,
don't give out the word on that. We don't want people to be all excited. Although I understand new missing episodes of Doctor Who are being installed with every copy of iOS 9 that's downloaded right now.
Yeah, whether you choose it or not.
Yes. No, that's Microsoft Windows 10. Being installed on everyone's computer. Yeah, when you're ready for the upgrade, it's there. Don't worry, it's going to be there for you. As usual, we try to look at the story, then try to look at the animated aspects of the story. So, I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed this episode thoroughly. I thought it's a much better Cybermen story than Tenth Planet.
Oh, yeah.
I like the costumes much better. I would opt for a third choice on voices.
No. A, you don't have a third choice, and B, no, you're wrong.
Not for a while anyway, but I don't, you know, there's a thing, and I don't know what it, I'm not sure what it's called. It's called there's another name for it. The only thing I can think of is it used to be called, when I was a kid, and I apologize in advance to anyone, but it used to be called a Jew's harp. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's a thing you put in your mouth and twang this, like a wishbone thing.
Oh, yeah,
and
it's, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not sure what that's called. That's what these voices sound like. It sounds like somebody's trying to talk through one of those. And because I think my grandfather used to do that sometimes. He could make it kind of sound like he was talking through the thing, and it would give it a weird ring noise to the voice. And that's what I get out of this. It's definitely a subtitles on moment for no. them in many cases.
Oh, come on.
And this Cybermen have...
It's not like they're getting hugely sophisticated dialogue either. I mean...
Admittedly.
There were a couple
places where when they get into a little mantra, you're just kind of, I don't know. It's like, yeah, he didn't pronounce his words very well there. That's all. I never have trouble with the Daleks. Never had trouble with the Dalek voices.
I'm struggling to think of, you know, all threats will be what? No, I'm going to have to switch them on.
It's just a comfort level. It's probably because, you know.
You're complaining the Cybermen don't provide sufficient comfort.
Yes. In their speech, yes, they don't.
You see, the thing that's always, I've probably banged on about this before, but bugged me about any of these, but, you know, the Daleks and the Cybermen in particular, as augmented organisms, they still use speech. I mean, what's that about? Why would you do that? Why would you do that? And you might still use speech. I can accept that, though some kind of brain interface would obviously be better. But if you did, are you really going to have to sort of stand in front of each other? And because they tend to speak in this monotonous and
repetitive, monosyllabic
vocabulary, repetitive, and they stand in front of each other and have these enormous exchanges of extremely boring dialogue, and you're thinking, but no, you'd have some kind of radio inside your casing,
or USB.
And you would transmit it directly to an implant next to your cybernized eardrum or whatever, so no one else would hear it anyway.
Well, then how would they give their plot away and let the good guys?
Yes, obviously from a dramatic point of view, but equally from a dramatic point of view, and there are some stories that are worse on this than others. I think Destiny of the Daleks may have been the one that pushed me over the edge, but whenever you have the Daleks on their ship chatting away to each other, it kills the drama. It completely kills it. So you have to use it really sparingly from a dramatic point of view. And I think the time it works from both a dramatic and a kind of logical point of view is when they are talking to humans, because obviously
that's their only way of talking somehow. To humans.
Yeah,
their demands.
But there are a couple of exchanges in this, Cyberman to Cyberman that did have me going, oh God. But yeah. By and large, no, voices are great.
So one of the things I really liked in this episode was the fact that when the Doctor and Ben and Polly came aboard the space station to find Jamie, who'd been taken aboard and obviously didn't have anything to do because they hadn't apparently anticipated he was going to be in this story probably when they wrote it, was that the base commander wasn't immediately hostile to them. He was not right off the door, wow, we had this disease and you show up, you're it, lock him in the jail.
Yeah,
I
can't remember if I read it or if it was on the documentary, but I think Kit Pedler didn't like having this 18th century character inserted into the 21st century futuristic story, which is why he spends quite a lot of the time being unconscious. But still, great to have him.
Well, I thought I had read, and I don't know if it's true, but I thought I'd read that Jamie was added.
Yes, he was.
Kind of very last minute.
Yes.
So,
yes.
That's
definitely in the documentary. He talks about Innes Lloyd, and Fraser Hines does an impression of him. He's very good at impressions, isn't he? Sort of saying, how do you want to join the TARDIS crew for another year or so? And he says, but you just filmed me waving goodbye to the Doctor and Ben and Polly, but then he goes and films waving goodbye to Hannah Gordon, and off he goes. But he gets given, the odd line off of Ben or whatever, rather than being written as a part, because he was new to it. I think this is not necessarily that situation. I think it might be because Kit Pedler didn't want him inserted in it, but it wasn't too late to write him in it.
Right.
If you see what I mean. When you get onto the macro terror or whatever, it was a given.
Right. I liked the fact that it wasn't immediately hostile, which is, too much of a trope in later episodes.
Yeah.
Admittedly, somebody knocking at the door of the moon base. We don't know how commonplace space travel is. We don't know if there are any other moon bases on the moon. We don't know the world of 2070 in this particular case. So, it's possible that there could be moon bases all over the place. And sometimes people go from one to another. And I would suspect, and I'm, again, wishful thinking, that there's probably some precedent, whether it's legal or just courtesy, that says, well, if somebody shows up at your door on the moon, you take them in and treat them humanely, because they're going to die if you don't.
Yeah. So that doesn't necessarily mean you give them freedom to run around the base. But you'd expect that they would know about. I mean, even if, as you say, there are that kind of interbase shuttle travel is more common or whatever, you would still expect that there would be some kind of early warning system that would, or just basic security, you know.
They found Jamie pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I did make a note that when they're trying to work out what happened to someone inside the base, they didn't have any CCTV inside the base. But then they did have some cameras outside. So, you know, 2070 is almost as advanced as 2015. 21.
Well, you know, in 1960X, they just really did not have a good picture of the future. We've discussed this before, I think. I have always had a fascinating... I love looking at old shows, projections
the future from the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, this is pretty good, actually, I think. The moon base model, you know, that sort of dome thingy doodah. I mean, who knows what the first moon base will look like, but mm-hmm. and having them all kind of strolling around in t-shirts rather than being dressed in tinfoil,
yeah,
it does all look a lot better, I think.
And just like 10th Planet, could this be Kit Pedler? They're all multinational with their flags and names on their outfits.
Yeah, yeah. Although I noticed that the TARDIS didn't manage to keep translating Andre Moran when he got a bit overexcited.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot. Michelle asked me about one of those the other day where, every time the 10th Doctor says, allons-y, why is it allons-y?
Yeah, yeah. Good point. Good point.
I think it's probably the writers.
So on the subject of Kit Pedler, because one of the things that I picked on with 10th Planet, Jerry Davis wrote 10th Planet and then Kit Pedler came in on the last couple of episodes, I think. Is that right?
I'm not sure. I know it was a collaborative effort, but I'm not sure
definitely,
how
Definitely the credit on the episode one is Jerry Davis. And then by episode three, it's a joint credit. So
could be that they hired him to do the job and he was struggling, so they...
Jerry Davis was the script editor at this point, I think. Am I right? And
so Kit Pedler is a scientist then.
One
of them's a writer.
Right, because Kit Pedler is getting... He's getting the sole credit on the moon base.
Moon base, yeah.
The science in here, I love this idea of the weather control station up on the moon, the graviton and all that. It's really well done, and it's so much more... It seems to me so much more visually interesting and imaginative than the whole rockety pole
thing
space.
At the Arctic, yeah.
Yeah. So there was the low gravity jumping stuff, which I'd have been fascinated to see
how that went.
How good did that look?
Probably looked like the Cybermen at the end.
Yeah,
floating
possibly.
Off into space.
Possibly.
Just in a guess. I'd say they may have been using the same technique.
plus, you know, the moon base.
One might almost say they look like they were swimming as an underwater menace, possibly. I've seen clips from underwater menace, and it looks pretty bad. I mean, of them swimming in wires.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so
maybe they had some wires left over from it. I don't
exactly.
know. I did notice this, speaking of leftovers, the spacesuits that the Doctor keeps in the trunk in the TARDIS...
I wish David Tennant had worn those.
Yeah. Well, they're very nice and everything, but isn't it a happy coincidence that they are identical to the ones they've got on the moon base?
I didn't think they were.
They look pretty damn similar to me.
They're very similar. I agree, they're very similar, but I thought that the ones the Doctor had were a different material. A very similar style. Absolutely.
I didn't look at them closely, but
I thought that the Doctor's bottles contained water. The ones for Ben and Polly, and they had some sort of liquid inside that little. Yeah, they were very similar. I'm not.
I mean, it's the whole goldfish bowl thing, yeah. Rather than the more, kind of more conventional.
Hey, at least they had goggles on.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought all that was fab. I thought, you know, the whole depressurization thing was fab. The whole Moon not being an egg with changing mass was
pretty good. I like that part. I like that part a lot. Well, obviously it was still an egg. We just
but you know, not having lots of references to its mass suddenly changing because it was hatching. And fighting the Cybermen with the acetone mixture and all that stuff. All good, basically. All good.
Yeah, I'm very fine with the episode. The Cybermen were a little, I'm not entirely sure what the heck they were doing in the base.
They were taking over the Graviton so that they could use the weather manipulation to wipe out.
Okay,
the
then that
humans.
Part I get. But so they dig a tunnel under the moon base, and they come up. Uh-huh. Then they put stuff in the sugar so that it gets in some of the people's coffee. Then they wait for those people to get sick and then reach a point where they're nearly dead. And then the Cyberman, who's just hiding in the sick bay under the sheets, grabs them and hauls them back to the cyber ship. And then they convert them and bring them back and as remote control people who you obviously know are remote control because they get the big black veins all over. It just didn't.
No, those were the ones who were left. I thought they'd taken them back to the ship to convert them into full cyber.
No, they brought, like Dr. Evans and stuff, they brought them back. That's all they did to them was convert them to have the headpiece on.
Oh, right, okay.
They didn't convert them to Cybermen. They turned them into cyber zombies, I guess.
Oh, well. I may have to. I assumed that was part of a cybernization because again, one of the things that I was critical of in the 10th Planet was, although you had an explanation that the Cybermen of Mondas were once like the humans of Earth, but had done this to themselves, it was entirely a kind of description where they were telling us, not showing us. Mm-hmm. Whereas the fabulous, that effect of the thing going through the veins and everything, mm-hmm. seemed, and the headpiece and everything, it's that all seemed like it was like, it reminded me a little bit of the nano, cyber nano things in the right. Irritating,
it reminds me
silver.
A lot of
what was the Neil Gaiman episode?
Silver Nemesis. No, we're getting close.
No, not Silver Nemesis.
Nightmare in Silver.
Nightmare in Silver. That one, yeah. The Nightmare in Silver. But this seemed to me, it was like the first step in that cybernization process. So you could see people starting to lose their humanity, and you could see how that step could be made, the missing link, and progress to kind of full on. Cybernization.
I think it could have been. I just don't think. I mean, that isn't what they did in this episode. They, you know, that this is some sort of neural inhibitor, and so it takes over their nerves, and they run them back to the base, and they, you know, put the helmets on them or whatever you want to call those headpieces and control them, and maybe that is the first step.
It certainly suggested it to me. To me, what was so effective in the audio spare parts in which they tried to borrow for the rise of the Cybermen was the connection between the character of Yvonne that you know and mm-hmm. the cybernized Yvonne, because there's a connection to a real person, to a real
right.
story there, so you understand the true horror of what the Cybermen actually are. So that to me becomes suddenly much more plausible when you see this kind of technology in action, the you know, taking over the nervous system, taking over or suppressing or doing whatever it is to control them through that headset thing.
So then let's talk a little bit about the cyber conversion process. I mean, in 10th Planet, they explicitly state that the people that they take back to their planet will become Cybermen. In this episode, there is no apparent immediate threat from the humans to the Cybermen, who don't even know the Cybermen exist. we know they're not flying around in Mondas anymore, and it's not going to come around on another orbit and have that same explosion destruction. So why do they consider the humans a threat that have to be completely and utterly wiped out off the face of the planet? And second, why don't they want some of them for conversion?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, possibly they won't wipe them out. Possibly they'll just wipe out their defenses or weaken them or...
But there's somebody said, and you know, there were more than one opportunity where they said, but you're going to wipe out all life on the planet. Correct. All threats will be eliminated, which does not sound anything like a cyberman because I can't do that. But, you know, it was like, no, he's reiterating that, yes, we're going to kill all life on the planet. And he should be saying, you know, and the survivors will be made like us, which is the terror of the Cybermen.
That you will be like us.
And which is not always, you know, not always evidence in the Cybermen. And I'll give an example. The first Cyberman story I ever saw was Revenge of the Cybermen. And I would have never gotten that. I'd have never, there's nothing in that about converting people to Cybermen along the way. So it's, you know, it just shows up in some episodes and not others. But it is that dehumanizing thing that turns us into monsters instead of monsters from somewhere else kind of thing.
Yeah, granted. And so I thought there was a suggestion of that, but I take your point that it could have featured more in their master plan. But I mean, otherwise, the appearance of the Cybermen, as we've mentioned, the voices of the Cybermen, the weaponry of the Cybermen, because being zapped with the electric hand zappy thing is so much more scary than the kind of portable heater things that they were carrying around.
Yes. Well, they've had 100 years, almost 90 years to improve their weaponry. So I think that's fair.
Yeah. Right. So that's true. So we get a callback. There were Cybermen. Every child knows that.
Yeah.
Our base commander remembers that. He understands who they're referring to from 84, whatever years ago.
Right. But.
But Rose doesn't remember them.
Well, there you go. Well, time can be rewritten. We learned that from Time of Angels and Weeping Stones, or whatever the other half of it was.
One of the many alternative timelines. But then equally, they don't remember them in 1986 from when they invaded in 1968.
Correct.
Time must have got rewritten then as well,
Unit,
I guess.
Official Secrets Act. On that one.
Yeah. Except that they were trundling around in front of St. Paul's. And I think there was a reference to it being reported.
Could be.
But I might have to watch The Invasion again.
Oh, well. You're just looking for an excuse now.
Yeah. Yes, please.
So one thing I thought was interesting, done in by nail polish remover.
No, I like that.
I up to a point, I'm not sure I'm convinced that the Cybermen would melt away entirely like they did in 10th Planet, which I'm not convinced they would do either.
No.
But did you notice... No.
But I like it better than the whole gold thing.
Didn't we have... Oh, yeah, okay, fine. I won't argue there. Particularly the gold thing that they have going on in the later episodes where it's like, oh, a gold touches a Cyberman and he explodes. Like, as opposed to, you know, it plates their breathing apparatus and causes them to suffocate. Well, yeah, all right, fine. Maybe graphite would do that too. I don't know. But we mentioned it in the 10th Planet that Ben had to kill in that episode, and he seemed to have some reservation. He had no reservation going after the Cybermen this time, none whatsoever.
No.
So, and that's only, like I said, four episodes later. I don't know what to make of that, or if anything at all. I just thought it was interesting that we had that moment where Ben was kind of hesitant to do it in the first time, and then this time, because they are still people, sort of, there.
And yeah.
Although these look less people-like, because they have the funky three-fingered hands, and they don't have the human hands sticking out. And they look more. They do look more machine-like. To be fair, they look more machine-like.
They probably do. Yes, they do look more machine-like. But he knows that they're the same. But I don't know. I mean, you could sort of argue that it's worse the first time, and you could also argue that in the heat of the moment, it's a much more kind of confusing thing in 10th Planet, where these Cybermen who he's never encountered before are threatening him, and it's a what shall I do? What's the, you know, how do I make this choice? But having now decided, had some distance from that and reflected on how evil the Cybermen are, he's you can see how why his instincts would have changed.
That's true.
From the instincts to it's another human being to it's a threat to human beings. I did think on the question of them, part of their plot being the sugar stuff, when they were looking at the food supplies being messed about with, I immediately thought, it's like rats have been at it. It must be cybermats. But of course, we don't see those till Doom. So,
right, that was and of silly course, of me. And of course, you're on the moon, and your food supplies are busted up, and you get a passing mention. Oh, it looks like the rats have been in it. I'm kind of worried. I don't know. Also, the doctor. Come on, please. I'm going to check everything on this base. Everything at all. We're going to look at shoelaces and shoes and this, that, and the other. Like, you don't think to look at the food?
Yeah.
Like, what gets into people? Oh, the food. Let's try some samples of the food. And he even says at one point he's checked everything. And apparently everything means everything but the food. I did kind of think that was not Troughton's finest hour as the doctor in that. I did like that, Polly's
That's not in the performance. That's not in the performance.
No, it's in the script. Right.
I think Troughton was excellent with the sampling. It was an absolute hoot, you know, kind of scraping people's boots while they were busy working and things.
Yes, yeah, I agree. There was the comedy element of Troughton working on that episode doing that, but
and when he's in the lab pretending to be busy so that he doesn't get thrown out.
Right. That's all classic Troughton. I'm absolutely pleased we have that back in the thing. It was one of those things, like, the doctor was not at his smartest. And I did appreciate Polly's challenging the doctor about his medical degree over.
Yes.
You know, so I'm just saying, maybe between 1880 and 2070, that something's changed.
Yes.
It's a fair question. And it was phrased very, it was phrased very well, because she points it out. The doctor's like, are you saying something like that? And she is trying to be as nice as she possibly can and point out, you know, maybe something's changed. It's like, I'm thinking, actually, we can look at this episode from 2015 and look back at 1967, I think, and say, probably there probably has been a little bit changed since Lister's time.
that would have been true then too.
Yes.
I think that, you know, that's just about Polly's finest hour in both in that and in the, you know, coming up with the nail varnish remover stuff
of the few hours really, we have of Polly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in this story, you have, I complained about it in 10th Planet. Polly goes and makes the coffee. She's told to make the coffee again twice in this one.
Keep the morale up.
Ben tells her when they're going off to, he and Jamie are going off to whatever they do. Not you, Polly. This is men's work. You know, why didn't he tell her just to go and make some more coffee? And then she brings it in here. I've brought us all some more coffee. And Ben says, without sugar this time, I hope.
I thought it was meant to be a joke by, you know, as opposed to intelligence, but
it's not funny. The interesting thing is I've come across two defenses of this in the, I read a blog Simon Guerrier wrote about Ben and Polly, and he argues that in this, that she's being positive, and that by making the coffee, she comes up with the solution because that's how the doctor realizes it in the sugar. But that doesn't quite cut it for me. And Annika Wills herself says she doesn't think making the coffee is demeaning, because if you have the, you know, if you have the honour to be assisting the doctor, you do whatever it takes. But Ben doesn't get asked to make the coffee, does
Ben
he?
Ben makes terrible coffee, though. See, well, he hasn't got the girl skills.
And he does get, Gary makes the point, he does get asked to do the tidying up, which he makes a complete mess of. But I don't know, I find those kind of things really, really, really trying. And it's not like Doctor Who hasn't done better with previous female characters, even at this point.
Then. This is a slight tangent, but earlier in the year, I met as part of the summer camp. It was one of our cabin counselors was a young lady who's British by birth, and I'd put her in her mid-20s, doctoral student of some kind, and this is very sharp, is what I'm getting at, and she's a huge Doctor Who fan, right? But she does not know Doctor Who from prior to Christopher Eccleston. Fair enough. At that age, you would not necessarily do that. And she said to me, she said, I'm afraid to watch old Doctor Who because I'm afraid it will be so sexist that I will not be able to enjoy it, put up with it.
Yeah.
Is it?
I mean, some of it is. Some of it is.
Obviously, some of it is, you know, you can't, I mean, have shows where
you,
some...
I don't think you could... You couldn't argue that the new show is above criticism.
New.
Though obviously it is completely different, and it is like, you know, Who of all eras, Who of all eras is of its time. But I think if you look at a character like Zoe Herriott,
mm-hmm. who's very smart.
I think she's a brilliant character. You know, and so I think it varies. I mean, I think one of the things, and it's true, it's true of the modern show, though maybe a bit less so. One of the things about Doctor Who is how much variety there is in the quality of it and in the style of it, as you go from writer to writer, and indeed as you go from producer to producer. In the space of years or even months, the show can change dramatically. So, and also, you know, you're looking at 26 years. So I wouldn't have said to her, you won't ever come across sexism that makes your skin crawl or that takes you right out of it and stops you enjoying it. But at the same time, you will find lots and lots of Doctor Who that... of which that is not true, which is brilliant anyway, and which is actually quite progressive and quite advanced and quite ahead of its time.
I wonder if you say, I mean, any show from 1960 mids, it's kind of hard to, well, you can't rewrite history. It is what it is.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you know, you can hide from the past. You can pretend it didn't happen, or you can ignore it at your own peril. I don't know. This came up because of that. But Polly here is oh boy, she's really not.
The point about this is, I think that it, of course, it is. You can make the explanation for it. It is of its time, etc., etc. And the fact that it's there doesn't make bits of the episode that are great and exciting and entertaining and well-written any less exciting and well-written than the rest of it. But at the same time, if it takes you out of it, and you're watching this thing for enjoyment, you know, if it just makes you angry to see these kind of things, you're not going to enjoy it as much.
All right, let's shift gears then, and let's talk about the animation.
Just before we do,
okay.
There are a couple of things about the rest of the episode that I wanted to mention. Okay. One is the weird thing in episode 3, where we start to hear the Doctor's head.
Oh, yeah, okay. That is weird. And unfortunately, because it's... Well, I have that for the animated.
It occurs in an animated episode, yeah?
Right, that's why I put that... I had that listed in my animated section. I wanted to talk about that.
It's not particularly to do with the animation. As far as I'm aware, that's something that occurred in the original episode.
Yes, I would agree with that. But my question is, did they get it right? Was the doctor talking out loud to himself back to the doctor thinking to himself? That was the part that I'm listening to. I'm like, okay, this, for all the world, based on the way they've treated the audio, this sounds like the doctor's thinking, I wonder what they would do with that, and then speaking out loud. Of course they'd be using gravity! Or was it?
It's the fact that we're hearing the thoughts inside his head at all that is... It's a departure from the House style.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what's slightly jarring about it, because... Yeah. That doesn't happen in Doctors. It's like in The Avengers. There's an episode called The House That Jack Built. Very well-regarded episode,
but it's
for some
almost
reason.
A one-hander there.
Yeah, indeed. Steed features very, very little in it. Diana Rigg is, you know, it's mostly just Diana Rigg. You hear what she's thinking in her head. It's very, very jarring because that... You know, that's not the style of the show.
It's either that or a narrator.
You take it. Well, maybe. But I think the thing is, in this, could you not have rewritten it so that the Doctor was speaking to someone, you know, the André Morin character, or if
was he
Jamie
really hiding behind
Polly
the counter?
Around?
The whole thing is problematic, and I just felt that it was made more problematic by the animation, because I'm trying to figure out if that's really what was happening. I mean, I'm pretty sure you're right. I'm pretty sure at least some of that dialogue was his internal narrative, which is weird for Doctor Who. I'm not entirely sure if it was supposed to be, for example, both of them internal narrative and they treated them differently because he's answering himself backwards, or whether one was internal and one wasn't, or... Maybe they both weren't, and that was just kind of weird sound processing. Or, you know, was he spinning around on a dime and talking to himself like Matt Smith in, you know, turn left, turn right, turn left, right? I don't know. And because all we have left is the audio and whatever they made of it, I don't know if it was better in the real.
Plus, do we have the script for this? You know, do we...
Could be. I don't know.
Do we have some other evidence of... I don't know on what basis that comes from, but
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, yes, I agree. It's strange and it's odd and it's kind of out of place.
On the plus side, I was just going to comment on the fact that we get. I'm not sure whether I just missed it in the Tenth Planet or whether it's used a lot more here, but the Cybermen theme, which I love. Really gets a good outing in this episode. So, you know.
It's funny you should say that.
Top marks for the music.
The music is not listed, is not credited, I believe, in the end. And some of that, I'm positive, is music from, like, the Dead Planet. So I think this is, canned. But yes, there is that music we expect of the Cybermen. I wanted to go back and look into that further, but I just didn't get the chance to do so. But yeah, we do. There's also that spacey moonbase music, like when they're in the airlocks and stuff. And I think that's from somewhere else too.
Could well be.
I think this is a little bit of an amalgamation, but obviously there is that, Cyberman March or whatever you want to call it in it. That was there. I should just go look that up on the 50th anniversary DVDs or a CD collection.
You mean what its official?
Where
official
it came
title
from.
Is.
Yeah, they usually have those pegged down from the episode they actually came out of. So, and I know that music's in there. So,
well, it gets used in. Does it get used in the Invasion? It certainly gets used in Tomb. Get used in the Invasion.
Not in the Invasion. Invasion's got that sort of Ipcress file sound to it.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. Which was wonderful. I remember noting that now, yeah.
Tomb, I think. I think it gets it in Tomb.
Yes, it must be Tomb.
So if this came first, obviously. Indeed. I don't remember it from 10th Planet, though.
No, well, that's what I was wondering. But it might have been that I was distracted by other aspects of 10th Planet, and it was dominant in this. They used it a lot, but that's good because it's great.
Okay, so were they saving money? They went from 10th Planet to doing Moonbase. So they already had Ben and Polly models done, because I did not realize it, but this is obviously the same people that did 10th Planet, right?
Yes, it's Planet 55 again, and I was wondering about that, because what that means is, since, unless between the time people are listening to this and when we recorded it, i.e. now, there's been some announcement about the Underwater Menace. That leaves Kurios, however you say it.
Yeah.
They only ended up animating the one, the Ice Warriors. Although, oddly, they get a credit for animation on the documentary that goes along with Moonbase, which surprised me. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And I don't know whether it was always intended to be Planet 55 or whether they picked this one up because there was a problem. But again, nothing on the DVD to tell us about animation. So
they seem to completely ignore that fascinating aspect of it, and then they just...
Yeah, I know. Don't care. I think we're going to have to wait for the sort of 100th anniversary reissue series or something, when they'll redo loads of the documentaries and they'll have the animators in 50 years time talking about their recollections of animating it.
We used to have to use computers to do animation back then. You couldn't just think it.
I'm going to say, though, about the because it's essentially the Thetamation of Reign of Terror, even if the company has changed. 10th Planet, better than Reign of Terror in terms of the animation.
Mm-hmm.
Moonbase, better than 10th Planet.
Better than 10th Planet, absolutely. It's their really, best work yet.
It's starting to grow on me. This is...
Okay.
You know, I want the Crusade now, please.
But I think they're less... Okay, well, all right. Here's something I noticed very much about this animation this time, and not so much in the other. Well, we mentioned it in 10th Planet. There's shots that you wouldn't see in the animation. There's flares and styles and silhouettes and things that just probably were not, or cutting, not the way they would have done it in the 10th Planet. In this one, there are scenes that are, I'll swear, they're rotoscope from other episodes. They're absolutely rotoscope from other episodes. Like Good that shot of him, the Cyberman, working that communications console, just the arm with his little wiffle ball. That's in episode 4, identically.
Okay.
And the scene where the first Cyber March, where they come along and they kind of come up over a rise, and then the Cybermen, one of them steps forward and then gestures everyone to spread out, it's exactly done in episode 3 again. And it's, if I could overlay the two, I would say that they literally rotoscoped that scene and reused
the process, they certainly use rotoscoping in it, and there's a lot. I'm quite happy for them to use the stylistically to take advantage of the fact that, yes, animation is never going to give you an identical, you know, we've had this argument before. Yeah. So in the gap where we don't know what's there,
discussion,
that makes sense to me. But from a production point of view, if they've got a scene where they can just straight take it from another episode because the same thing appears, then surely that's an easier and presumably cheaper way of doing it. And also, from the point of view of us watching these episodes sandwiched now, because you get animated, you get live action, you get animated, you get live action, so you're switching back and forth, it's easier for us to watch if
I'm
they
not
make
complaining.
Bits that match.
I am totally not complaining about it. I think that they have come closer to in style because they have...
Yes.
Admittedly, perhaps the fourth time we saw the Cyberman's arm come down and do the fiddling with the remote control or fiddling with the communications device and go, that's the exact same animated sequence.
Recycling, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of was beginning to think, okay, they did this one cheaper. They did it on the cheap. I'm not against it. So there might be a limit to how many times you can draw that well in the same episode, because there is only two episodes that are done up that way. But yes, when you would walk across those, I think one of the scenes with the shoes in the dust is also copied from the cyber tennis shoes, or cyber trainers, we'll call them.
Yeah.
I think that one was also taken right off of a scene from episode 3. And like I said, it's fine. The animation looks better this time. I'm not sure exactly why.
It did seem to me that the drawings lacked as much contrast.
Well, that's probably good.
Well, I don't know. It was like the lighting in it flattened everything out. And there weren't as many shadows as there ought to be. It was maybe too much the other way in Reign of Terror, where it was too contrasty. It felt better in the second animated episode for me, but that may have just been me getting used to it. But it still felt like the invasion, which is my benchmark in terms of this. There was plenty of contrast and also a simplicity about the drawings, and this didn't have as much contrast as that under some of the other animations, and it didn't have that kind of nice simplicity still to the animation. I mean, that it was worse in Reign of Terror, so it's getting better, but it's still not
bounce around as much.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but you know, like I say, I'm ready to watch the Crusade reconstruct, and you know, come to that. Can we have Power of the Daleks?
They have nothing of Power of the Daleks, do they?
Yeah. So give me six episodes of this animation, it'll do.
It would do. I'm totally, but I'm going to guess that three times the budget. Part of the reason I like the animation in this one, I think, is because they were recreating shots that are more consistent with there was very few shots. I think one where a Cyberman shadow shifted in the background in the medical complex that I thought, yeah, that's probably not what we saw in the original. Or the scene where the Doctor and the Cyberman are standing there and the Cyberman says, "You are known to us." Pause, 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 walk off. And like, yeah, I'm sure something happened there. But the fact that it maintained the feel of the rest of the episode really helped. And again, I think the spacey sets don't require as much Louis XIV chair intricacies as they did in the Reign of Terror. So
yeah, so possibly doing a historical would be less.
So it will be interesting to see what they do with the Underwater Menace and whether or not they include
it would lines be interesting
in there in the wires
if they did it
when they did it. Yeah. Well, they've got the models. They've got the Doctor and Jamie and Polly and Ben now. I mean, it should just be whipped together some secondary characters and a little background here and there, and they should be fine. I don't know. Okay, one problem with the animation. Maybe it's a problem with the original shot. Maybe. The Doctor lands the TARDIS on the moon, and then we get that shot where the ginormous spacecraft is right outside the front door of the TARDIS, probably about
the spacecraft.
Yeah, the Cyberman spacecraft, probably about 200 feet in front of the TARDIS, and no one sees it. Go look at the landing shot where the TARDIS comes down. The cyber spacecraft is in the foreground of the screen, and if you look, the TARDIS is kind of small in the distance, but it's got the, you know, pull to open on the front, so the front door is facing the darn cybership, and they repeat that shot towards in episode 3 somewhere too, and it's just like, how did they not see that? I'm sure that's not what the shot, if it looked like that when they aired the original episode, then that's a complete failure on the part of the the effects team. Either way. It's just like, how could you not see that spacecraft there? Similarly, there's also the scene where Hobby is looking through the telescope, and they're saying, yeah, there's that ship right out there. And he's staring right at it, and he's going over it, and it's painfully obvious that it's there. And they're saying, and he's like, no, I can't see it. So it's right there. Look for the glare in the sun. And then he pans over it again, and it's so obviously there. And then there's like a little bit of light reflects off it. And he goes, oh, now I see it. You're right. It's there. Like, yeah, no. He's blind. He must be blind. It's just that simple. Even in black and white, with a gray spacecraft on gray background, with gray sky, it was kind of obviously there.
Yeah, it's right next to the TARDIS in the original.
Oh, okay. There's a picture of it somewhere. Yeah.
Yep, I found a telesnap, and as you describe, you've got the model cybership in the foreground, and a few yards behind it, there's the TARDIS.
Not very far away. That's right. And they never saw it.
Yeah.
When they come out. Well, I'll
So you can't blame that one on the animators.
I will apologize to the animators for everything I said to you when the episode opened up. If you heard me, sorry about that. That was... And I think we have seen that in the past where they've done a sort of model shot that's meant to be more stylistic than realistic. Like, there's the TARDIS and there's a spacecraft and they're both on the moon. That's what you need to know. The fact that maybe that would have tipped their hand a little bit.
Of course, in defense of the designers on this, would the Doctor and his companions have identified it as being a cybership? Because if not...
No, but they didn't see it at all. They started hopping around and then later fell over a rise and saw a moon base elsewhere. And it's like, you didn't notice the spacecraft right outside your door? I somebody should have said something like, Jamie, oh, what's that? You know. You know. It just is hard to imagine that they missed it based on that shot. But I'm sure it was, like I said, I'm sure it was meant to be, you know, in the script they can't see that, right? Too late now. No budget.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't have anything else. I mean, these are the same guys... I think they came better in tone than 10th Planet, so I'm happy there. I think yeah. We see evidence that things that you could maybe think was being over-dramatized by the animators, like the completely melted Cybermen, turns out is not, because I'm sure there's a shot of them in the fourth episode where they're completely dissolved, too. Yeah. You have to wonder why the Cybermen took those two astronauts that were out working on the antenna and why they bothered to take their spacesuits off and leave them behind. That's not an animated issue. That's just, why would they do that? Crosses my mind at the moment. But otherwise, no, I really thoroughly enjoyed the episode. I'm pleased it's back. Bring back more. That's what we keep saying. More episodes.
More episodes, yes. So hopefully, next time we talk about an animated episode, it's going to be the moon base.
This is the last one, isn't it?
That we've it could, got? Yes, it could be that this is the last Doctor Who animation in any form, really, that we have to discuss.
But I will say this, we will also...
We've come a long way from Death Comes to Time.
Yes, we have. We are going to continue this on a little bit, and we are going to look at the very least, The Web of Fear, because that's an official DVD release that has been reconstructed.
Well, indeed. I think we should look, too, at Marco Polo and Galaxy 4 that are also official DVD-released reconstructions.
Sorts, yeah. So I think that's probably...
And maybe The Underwater Menace, because if it's not animated, it's pretty much bound to be reconstructed.
If it comes out, we will look at it.
If it comes out,
I have...
It will happen.
I don't know, something's fishy about this whole thing. It's like it just shows up on the BBC shop. Nobody makes any announcements. You know, where's that coming from? Still no announcements from the BBC. I know that Annika Wills is going to be selling them signed. I think they're on.
Maybe she signed them already.
On her website, there's something, or I haven't seen it on her website because I haven't been to her website, but it says, you know, they're coming out, and it lists some stuff that's on there, and it completely, it feels like the blurb on the back of a Doctor Who DVD about what's included, but it doesn't mention anything about reconstructed, animated. It doesn't even mention the two missing episodes. So I don't know. I don't know what the heck's coming on there.
Well,
I would hate to think they're going to
be on
release,
there.
I'd hate to think that they would release that episode with the two episodes. It is two episodes missing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and take our money because people are still going to buy it and then go, well, I guess we didn't need to animate it. That would be, I want pitchforks and rioting if they don't animate it. People, keep that in mind. If you're in Britain, you're near the BBC. All right. Okay. Well, not entirely sure what the next thing will be, but it will be a thing. So, Simon, thank you for joining me.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fusionpatrol. Our Twitter username is @FusionPatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at youtube.com/fusionpatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.